Listening to KBOO Portland. Happy November 5th. It is November 5th, 2020, and live coming from me from the studios of Portland, Oregon, it is Fight the Empire. And now please welcome your host, Pear.
Well, this is Pear Fogreg, and we are fighting the empire. I am currently at the Winter Palace in southeast Portland. Well, this is a couple of days after the election, and Donald Trump is trying to stop the count, but he can't stop the clock. Pennsylvania Lieutenant, the count in Pennsylvania is drawing to a close, as the Lieutenant Governor has said, and there may be results tonight. So I believe Joe Biden is 6 points away from the magic number of 270. And so it looks like Donald Trump is on his way out of the White House. Although you have to wonder what purpose he saw when apparently Donald Trump has built this little unclimbable wall around the White House, and is he going to barricade himself in? Well, who knows? Donald Trump, in a way, is is playing with fire. He's taking on the establishment, what you might say, the deep state, or even the deeper state, because Joe Biden is the establishment's man, and he won the election by the rules that are in play in this country. And now Donald Trump, and sort of a childish buffoon who happens to be president, is trashing their game. And we wondered what does Donald Trump have in mind for the end game of this? Does he think that he can somehow make a deal with the establishment, where he will be sort of some kind of figurehead? Would he be happy just being a figurehead, or would the CIA be happy having Donald Trump as a figurehead? It looks like, as I said, Donald Trump seems to be playing with fire. It could possibly lead to some kind of, it already has led to a lot of civil strife around the country, and how far that will go is really no telling. But it looks like sooner rather than later, Joe Biden will become president, or be elected president. He won't take office until January 20th of next year, and then that gives That gives Donald Trump a couple months to do more damage, mess things up a little bit more. So we really wonder what Trump has in mind. Whenever Biden does take office, there are some things that we can expect. It looks like the nuclear deal with Iran will be reinstated. If you recall, this is something that President Obama had negotiated. And when Trump took office, he immediately pulled us out of that agreement. And so President Biden could be expected to bring us back into that agreement. There was also a U.S.-Russia arms agreement that apparently that we had pulled out of. And that could possibly be reinstated. And probably most important would be the Paris Climate Agreement. We could rejoin the group of nations around the world that are fighting to preserve our climate. And Donald Trump had pulled us out of that grouping also. So those are the good things that could be expected under President Joe Biden. What not so good might be possible moves against Russia. People might recall that under President Obama, that Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, was the sort of the point man for Russia and Ukraine. And Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and her sort of second in charge, Victoria Nuland, was in Ukraine, in Kiev, passing out cookies to the people kind of rioting in the streets of Kiev. And you sort of have to wonder, will that continue again? Will that kind of action pick up or not? Hopefully, a newly elected President Biden will be busy with more important stuff going on at home to resume adventures abroad. This is my fond hope, but who knows? If people out there have any, if you have any comment on that, give us a call at 503-231-8187. What do you think? What do you expect Biden to do when he becomes president? One thing I hear is that apparently Hillary Clinton is will get a job in the new administration, possibly as Secretary of State again, and some of the other people who are sort of reported to be ready for top jobs in the new administration are some kind of, I don't know, I guess you might call them some of the warrior women. There's Samantha Power and a woman named Michelle Flournoy. She's not that well known, but I hear that she is in line to be possibly be defense secretary. And she is a kind of a hawk as far as foreign policy goes. And we will just have to wait and see what happens between, after January 20th, but there seems to be one thing that I haven't heard. I haven't heard a lot of static about foreign interference in this recent election. According to what I did hear on that program called The World, which is on NPR, that the Russians would be trying to tap into existing divisions, and which sort of implies that, well, there are divisions, well, there obviously are divisions in this country, and that somehow the Russians might try and tap into them. How they would do that, I'm not sure. I mean, is reporting the same as interference? If Russian newspapers and TV news reports on these divisions in the American political scene, is reporting the same as interference? I mean, people, you can't stop commentary from happening. It's Americans, we comment on things going on around the world all the time. So that's kind of the way things look on the world scene right now. It's very interesting that here at home, their Ted Wheeler has been reelected. And he actually got 46% of the vote. His main opponent, Sarah Iannarone, got 40% of the vote. And then there was a write-in campaign for Teresa Raiford, and that got 13% of the vote. And so you have to ask, did that write-in campaign take away votes from Iannarone and put Wheeler in office or not? Some might say that, well, the people who did write in Rayford's name would not have voted anyway, that this was their input into the election. If they had not done that, they would have just stayed home. Others might say that, to me, it's anybody's guess. I don't know. An interesting thing, and I don't know if people have been following what's been going on with the British Labour Party, but Jeremy Corbyn has been ousted as the a leader of the British Labour Party, and it's kind of very distressing that this might have been, some of this may have been reported on Flashpoints. They have a reporter from England, Asa Winstanley. You hear him reporting on what's going on in the political scene there, where there's a lot of accusations of anti-Semitism in the British Labour Party. And what it comes down to is that the question is anti-Zionism the same thing as anti-Semitism? For some people, apparently, they are one and the same. And there is a group in the Holocaust Remembrance Association has drawn up a statement on anti-Semitism, which makes it appear that if you are against, if you, for some people, put it this way, for some people, standing up for the Palestinians is somehow a disservice to the Jews of Israel, and that this is a form of anti-Semitism. I would certainly disagree with that, but it's this is sort of a you hear this said quite a bit, in, you know, on in the news where that somehow standing up with the Palestinians is casting doubt on what they call Israel's right to exist, which is sort of an interesting concept because I'm not sure if any nation claims the quote right to exist. Nations exist or they don't, and you know, nations come and go. What does it mean to say a nation has a right to exist? Well, the Jewish people certainly have a right to exist, but Israel as a Zionist nation is kind of that's a different question. You might ask, does Palestine have a right to exist? There should be an equivalent. There, people, there is a question of equality here. But Jeremy Corbyn has been accused by different groups in England of being anti-Semitic because he does support Palestine and the rights of the Palestinian people. And this is taken by them to be sort of a some kind of slap in the face of the Jewish people. It's like you have to be for one or the other, that there is no way that these two people can exist side by side in a state of equality. And so Corbyn has been trashed quite severely, and finally he's been ousted as the leader of the British Labour Party. And he's kind of as far as I can see, the British Labour Party is really kind of doing itself in. The British Labour Party has been taken over by the people, the supporters of Tony Blair, who, to me, he's kind of like a conservative in a Labour dressing, and he. You might recall Tony Blair took over the British Labour Party back about 20 years ago, and he supported the U.S. War against Iraq. He was in sort of in cahoots with President George Bush, and to me, Blair has really kind of discredited himself and done the Labour Party a lot of damage, but nevertheless, there are a lot of Blair people in positions of power, and also in the media. And I'm sad to say the UK Guardian seems to be one of those media examples of support for Tony Blair. I don't know how many people read the Guardian. I check it every morning on the internet. It's very interesting that Tony Blair's people, his stand-in is a fellow named Keir Starmer, who is now the leader of the British Labour Party, and Jeremy Corbyn, who actually took. Came to power with the overwhelming vote of the Labour Party members. He is out in the cold, and it's really a sad case. I think the British Labour Party is dooming itself to kind of a sad existence, kind of like a left wing satellite of the Conservative Party. So if anybody has any comment on that? Have you been following the state of affairs of the British Labour Party? Give us a call at 503-231-8187.
Pierre, I just wanted to let you know we do have a caller, Arthur, that would like to comment on the Portland election that happened.
Okay, we have Arthur on the line. Good morning, Arthur.
Yeah, hello there. Hello there, Pierre. Mm-hmm. Hello there.
Yes, you're on.
All right. The election in Portland that I'm happy that it didn't pass was the Metro measure. And see, it's not just TriMet and Metro and City Hall. It's also Highway Department. It's Highway 99. So ODOT is in on this mess of a project that they claim to be all these things. So I'm glad it went down. It's a really good thing.
Was that the light rail going out to that shopping center?
It's a boutique shopping, Plaza Mall. But it's bad engineering. There's nothing to do with the cost. And they didn't tell us about the terrible impacts of taking out 5 miles of treescape and forest canopy. They're going to just turn Barber into this even wider speedway, which would make traffic worse. And they'd lie to us about that. I think Ted should be dragged to court because he was all, yeah, let's do it. I mean it. He's not off the hook. A crime has occurred here, and people know about that. And if Ted needs to be replaced, well, get that job to Sirianni.
Okay.
Anyway, so I've got another day to go before we can either rejoice or cry, at least. Maybe by Friday they'll have the national race figured out. I'll let you go with that, Bear, all right?
Okay, thank you for your call. Well, I know there was this talk about having a light rail, I guess, going down Barber Boulevard and winding up at the, what's that big shopping center out there in Tigard? Seems like a, well, I don't know, I mean, is running a light rail to a shopping center, is that considered a sound city planning, or is it kind of like a favor to special commercial interests? You know, of course, we do have the light rail here, goes out to, that big shopping mall in Clackamas. I don't know, is that a good thing? But anyway, apparently this measure for the most recent light rail measure did not pass muster.
Pierre, we have another caller, Jeremy, on the line. I would like to make some comments as well.
Yeah, we have another caller on the line. Good morning.
Hi, I caught some reference to the fact that people voting for Ms. Rayford cost High Anne Arone the victory, which I think is true, and I'm somewhat sad about that. I hated all three candidates, but I really wanted Wheeler gone. Obviously, Rayford wasn't going to beat him, and I possibly hate her as much as I hate him. What people don't realize about Ms. Rayford, in case she runs again, or in case you're giving her money, or in case you think she's some fabulous leader, in the aughts, she's very ambitious, and she worked in a bank, and she positioned herself as an upwardly mobile pro-business African-American. That didn't fly.
She owns a bank?
No, she worked in a bank.
Oh, worked in a bank. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she was a vice president. I think she was, whatever, a loan officer or something.
Well, yeah.
So anyway, I caught her act, which was really nauseating, as she was running, I think, for Multnomah County Commissioner, probably 03 or 04, and she was nauseating. And then when she reappears, 10 years later as this, fabulous progressive, I didn't believe one word she said, and I still don't. She's just positioning herself, and it worked. And it cost Diane Arone, who's got her own issues, the chance of beating Wheeler.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that looks to. I would guess that Diane Arone would have won had this write-in campaign.
I agree.
Not been
there. I think that's correct. And every time, I saw one of her idiot flyers, and people in my neighborhood, with Diane Arone signs up, said they were constantly being taken down by Rayford people.
Really?
Which is, which is pretty offensive.
What neighborhood is that?
Anyway, I live in Kearns, mm-hmm. sort of Buckman North. Okay. I mean, it's only a couple of people, but it's, you know, you're the only two people who had. I wouldn't put up an Ayn Rand sign.
Well,
I voted for her, but I don't like her.
Well, one thing that she talked about a little bit was having a public bank, which I think is a very good idea.
She was going to give Joanne the police bureau, which would have been just, if nothing else, it would have been funny as hell. I think it would have worked, you know, to have the right person, someone who is, in my, you know, extensive casual running into her. You know, I know her name. She doesn't know mine, but I think she'd be a hell of a police commissioner. And if she wasn't, it would have been funny to watch it anyway. And Wheeler's got to go. I mean, you know, the guy was born on third base and he thought he hit a triple.
Well,
his resume said he's not going to go. He's got four more years. But his resume says, you know, I ran an ice cream store. Yeah, he ran an ice cream store, and if he went broke, his mother would have written him a check for $5 million. The Wheeler Family Foundation has $50 million. He's definitely not just a one percenter. He's a half percenter or a tenth of a percenter.
Well, thank you for that input.
And one other thing, I'm really glad that I'm not the only person who basically believes in public transportation who thinks that the people spending our billions of dollars have misspent it. So I voted against that also.
Well, my opinion, I think light rail is fine for suburban commuters. It's, you know, if you have light rail from Hillsboro into Portland, you know, when it's out beyond the city limits, it can go pretty fast between the stations.
But yes.
Once it gets into the city, it's got to stop every block or so, and we have very short blocks, so basically becomes a pretty nice trolley car. And it's
what it becomes is a pretty nice paycheck for the people that build it. Even in the suburbs, it's an incredibly expensive cost per mile. I mean, I don't have a car. The only thing I take it for is usually covered by a bus. Sometimes the light rail's better, but I don't want to pay billions of dollars to get to the airport 5 minutes faster. Which is, you know, I mean, it parallels the 20 for, you know, within half a mile. I always use a bike plus transit. So it's like it's not all that great. Yes, it allows them to house people in Beaverton. They couldn't afford to live in Portland, and they can come in and, you know, have horrible jobs downtown or being roofers. But I'd like to change all that. And if we change all that, we wouldn't need billion-dollar boondoggles. Well, there's not really a boondoggle. It does exist, you know, but it really, you know, I mean, who built it? Goldsmith, you know, that it's new urbanism is what this is all about, you know, high density and you know, light rail. But light rail is crazy expensive, and, you know, it's only clean if you generate your electricity without pollution, which we don't. So I just think it's ridiculous. And if you look at it now, it's also empty. No one's using it. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you for your call. I've got a couple minutes left. If anybody wants to call in, putting in a kind word for Teresa Rayford, now is your chance. A few minutes left in this show. My feeling is that light rail is okay when used properly. It's fine for, it doesn't work downtown because it becomes like a, we already have trolleys in downtown, we have buses downtown, and they are suited for our short city blocks where they stop, at every other corner. But light rail is fine for bringing commuters in from the suburbs. Probably what they should have is more commuter lines that kind of get to some kind of central station within the city limits, and then commuters go from there to their places of work, taking buses or trolley or whatever, which is what they do in other cities where you have the commuter lines, and they like my dad in New York City, he used to take the Long Island Railroad into the city, and then he'd take the subway to work, and that's sort of, you know, you divide up the transportation task, and that's what other cities do. But
I just wanted to let you know you have one more caller really quick. Harry,
okay,
wanted to make some comments.
One quick call. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Harry. Thank you for taking my call. Do you know whatever happened to the water bill that was on the ballot?
I'm not sure. No. What exactly was that water bill?
Well, they tried to sneak it in. It was something that the water bill wanted money to do something. The Water Bureau was like, they have $5 billion. They didn't need any money. And I'm glad that Metro